Well, we took a flight out northwest of Barrow, and the reason we went out there was because we had this band of sea ice, broken up sea ice, but sea ice nonetheless, that ran from about 60 miles northwest of Barrow to 180 miles northwest of Barrow. There were 9 radio-collared polar bears in that band of ice. And we only have about 1% of the polar bears in the population marked. So those 9 bears probably represented lots of other bears. We went out there to see if by chance we could see some, and also to see firsthand what that ice looked like, since our only view of the ice had been from satellite images.
And what did you find?
Well, we did see 5 polar bears. We saw thousands of walruses. We saw a fair amount of, we were in a Coast Guard C-130, so we were going pretty fast, and it's not the best platform for seeing polar bears. So I was pleased that we saw 5 polar bears, given the amount of area that we covered. One of the things that was really interesting is that we saw a kill. So even in that low concentration sea ice, the sea ice being mostly 20 to 30% of the ocean being covered by small briggy bits of ice, polar bears that were out there were able to continue to catch seals, at least at some level. One of the things that's important about this is that this little band of ice or tongue of ice that's coming down from the main pack is still over the continental shelf. And our studies have indicated that the sea ice over the continental shelf is the preferred habitat for polar bears. That's the most productive waters in the Arctic, and those are the places where we think polar bears have the greatest access to catching seals. And this flight seemed to confirm that, indeed, even if the sea ice cover there is relatively low, polar bears will try and make use of it, and walruses will, too.
And overall, how does this summer's sea ice compare to last year, which, as you mentioned, was a record minimum?
Just last week, the Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado, put out the announcement that we had reached the second greatest ice decline of on record. So 2008 now is second to 2007 in terms of the degree of the ice retreat, having surpassed the ice retreat of 2005.
In the past months, since the Interior Department decided to list polar bears as a threatened species, the animals have frequently been in the news. Have you seen inaccuracies or misrepresentations? And if so, what have you heard or read?
Well, when you read the public media, you see lots of things that are not necessarily based on the science that's available. And perhaps one of the biggest misunderstandings that I've seen portrayed in the public media is the degree to which you can count on global climate models to make projections into the future. And this is a really important point because the projections that we made for polar bears in our series of reports last September were based largely on the outputs from these general circulation or global climate models. And what people say is, well, climate models aren't reliable for predicting or projecting beyond a certain time frame. Often you hear people say, well, they're not much good beyond 10 or 15 years. And actually, if you think about how these general circulation models work, it's probably the opposite case, that they're more, the longer into the future you look, the more reliable they are. The ability for climate models to predict something about the trend in climate depends on forcing factors, whether those forcing factors are greenhouse gases or solar irradiance or the eruption of a volcano. And it's true that we don't have the ability to test a 50 or 100-year projection until we get there. Once we get 50 years down the road or 100 years down the road, we'll know how good the projection was. But we have looked at, or climate scientists have looked at, how did the climate models do in handling the eruption of Mount Pinatubo, for example? Or how did they do when they backcast and looked at the paleo record? How did they look 100,000 years ago or 150,000 years ago? And in those measures, the models do pretty well. Now, it's true that doesn't say that they're going to do well for the next 100 years, But it does say that the model, the physics in the climate models have captured the importance of various forcing factors on the outcomes of the models. And it's important to remember that the laws of physics require that more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere mean a warmer atmosphere. The laws of conservation, mass, momentum, and energy require that. The Earth has a balance, an energy balance that it maintains with space. And if you add more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere, it changes that energy balance. The Earth has to adjust, and it adjusts by becoming warmer. Now, just how much warmer it gets is subject to some debate because of uncertainties in feedback mechanisms and because of the uncertainties in the chaos of the climate system. But what's important to remember is that as the fluctuations that are caused by natural occurrences in the climate system continue, they will continue over a higher baseline. In other words, the warm temperatures will be a little bit warmer on average. The cold temperatures will be a little bit colder or a little bit warmer on average than they would have been otherwise. I think a convenient way to think about climate models and forcing factors is to think about the analogy of an airplane. And think of the elevator. That's the part of the tail that determines whether the airplane is put into a descent or an ascent. And if the elevators are put in a down position, that will cause the airplane to dive. If you leave it in the down position, or if you increase that down position, it'll dive faster, it'll hit the ground faster. But when you first set the elevators, you don't know exactly when or where the airplane is going to hit the Earth because of updrafts and downdrafts and changes in atmospheric pressure that the plane will fly through, wind shears, and all of those things that are part of the chaos of the climate system. So you don't know exactly where or when the plane will hit the Earth, but you do know that it will hit the Earth. And also, you know that the longer into the future you look, the more likely it is to have hit the Earth. So bring that analogy back to the global climate models and the projections that we made for polar bears and for sea ice. And what you have is this continuing forcing factor of additional greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, meaning that the Earth has to get warmer. We don't know exactly how much warmer. And we don't know what the interactions will be with the chaos of the climate system, the ups and downs of weather. Like, for example, Anchorage being the coldest, one of the coldest summers this year that we've ever seen in the midst of global warming. But we know that the farther out into the future we look, the more likely it is that we're going to see major changes. And so if we look 10 or 15 years into the future, there's a lot of uncertainty as to how much sea ice might be left. But by the time you get 50 or 100 years out into the future, it's pretty clear that there will be very little summer sea ice left if we continue to increase greenhouse gases on the trajectory that we have been.
Quite a number of media outlets have reported that polar bear populations have been growing in recent years. Is that true? And if it is, why should we then be concerned about the bears' populations?
That's a good question, and that is one that's commonly reported in the media. Polar bear populations, at least in some parts of the world, are thought to have increased since the 60s or early 70s when overhunting was brought under control. Two of the best examples are in Alaska here and in the Svalbard archipelago north of Norway, where excessive hunting had gone on for decades. The populations were thought to be at quite low levels by the late 60s and early 70s. Regulations went into effect in the early 1970s to bring those harvests under control and within the bounds that the populations could maintain. Subsequently, since the early 1970s, those populations and some others around the world also are thought to have grown. The important thing to remember is that those numbers increasing, the increases in numbers that may have resulted from the release of pressure in good habitat conditions is a very different thing than declining habitat conditions. So what we've had is probably a growth in numbers in some parts of the polar bear range as habitats maintained and as hunting was brought under control. And now habitats are declining. the sea ice, we've shown pretty clearly, is the fundamental habitat of polar bears. As the sea ice declines, you can think of it as a decline in the carrying capacity for polar bears. Declining carrying capacity ultimately means fewer polar bears. So to say that, well, polar bear populations have increased in the recent past, why should we be concerned, is kind of like comparing apples and oranges. They increased in the past because of release of excessive hunting pressure under sound habitat conditions. Now we have a different problem. We have declining habitats.
Is there any evidence that perhaps polar bears are starting to adapt to sea ice loss?
We haven't seen any evidence of polar bears changing their ways in any of the fundamentals with regard to how they make a living. Polar bears are entirely dependent on the sea ice because that's where they have evolved to catch their prey, which is largely ringed and bearded seals. Polar bears have become the largest of the bears because of the very rich food source that they have in these marine mammals. You can think of these seals as giant fat pills that are laying out there for polar bears to catch. And those giant fat pills have allowed polar bears to become the largest of all the bears. For them to adapt to something else, we're talking about adaptation as an evolutionary process. It takes many generations to occur. And it's possible polar bears could adapt to something given enough time. But certainly the changes in the sea ice that we've seen so far haven't allowed enough time for adaptation because polar bears live up to 30 years. The other side of the question then is not adaptation, but what about behavioral plasticity? Is there an ability for polar bears to adapt a different lifestyle? And the one that's most commonly suggested is that they will just move on to land and adopt different foods. And that seems highly unlikely for a number of reasons. First, there's been physiological studies that have been done that have shown that the low-quality foods that are available in the terrestrial environments adjacent to where polar bears live are simply not rich enough for them to maintain their body condition. Large bears like polar bears can't process those kinds of foods fast enough to maintain condition. But there's also empirical observations that lead us to the same conclusion. If you look into the southern reaches of polar bear habitat around Hudson Bay, for example, one of the things that has been occurring there is that historically the sea ice has melted entirely. It's annual ice only there. There's no multi-year ice. And so every year the polar bears have had to come ashore for some extended period of time. They gain enough weight in the spring and summer before they have to come ashore that they can maintain themselves during that period on shore. In fact, they gain about 2 kilograms a day for every day that they're able to remain on the sea ice. Once they hit the land, they have access to all the terrestrial foods that are available there, but they still lose about 1 kilogram a day. So you go from gaining 2 kilograms a day while being out on the sea ice to losing 1 kilogram a day when you're scrounging around on land. That suggests to me that the terrestrial environment is not a very suitable environment for polar bears. Another example is right here in Alaska. In the Chukchi Sea, polar bears spend the winter time clear down into the northern Bering Sea. They migrate down with the sea ice because of the productivity of the Chukchi and Bering Sea region. And they take advantage of that productivity all winter. As the ice retreats in the summer, the polar bears go with it. They could get off of the ice and forage on land and wait for the ice to come back. But they don't do that. Instead, they make a very costly migration of over 1,000 kilometers each way to stay with the sea ice. I think it's reasonable that if they could make a good living on land, that at least some of them would stay on land, either on the Alaska side or the Chukchi Peninsula side in Russia. But they don't do that. So I think the empirical evidence is there that polar bears wouldn't do very well on land, and there's not any evidence that I'm aware of that suggests they are making a transition behaviorally to trying to stay on land.
Do you think there's any hope for sort of turning this train around and increasing the polar bear's sea ice habitat? Can the trends of the recent years be reversed?
One of the outcomes of our reports was that the decline in polar bears in the next 50 years or so is likely to be very severe, up to perhaps two-thirds of the world's population disappearing by mid-century. But another outcome of our report was that polar bears are likely to persist in what we call the convergent ice ecoregion and the archipelago. That's the far north region of northern Canada, the channels between the Arctic islands of Canada and East Greenland. And we expect that polar bears will persist there for at least 100 years. Now, the climate scientists who contributed to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports have concluded with greater than 90% certainty that the warming that we're experiencing and that's projected to continue for the next several decades is a result of human activity. It's a result of human contributions of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. So if humans are the cause of this problem, humans can turn it around. And if we get our act together and turn around the production of greenhouse gases, there will still be polar bears around to repopulate the sea ice when it comes back. One of the things that we're pretty sure of is that polar bears did survive periods in the past, at least two periods, where it was warmer than it is now. The last interglacial period of about 130 to 115,000 years ago or thereabouts, global mean temperatures were about a degree warmer than they are now. During that period, it looks like the sea ice retreated into the top of the polar basin and into the top of the Canadian archipelago, just like we projected it would. Similarly, during the Holocene thermal maximum of about 10,000 years ago, it looks like the sea ice did the same thing. The temperatures were not quite as warm during the Holocene thermal maximum. One of the things that's important to recognize is that during those periods, it was warmer than it is now, but it wasn't warmer than it's projected to be. The climate scientists tell us that within 50 to 75 years, global mean temperatures will be at least 2 degrees Celsius warmer than they are now, almost twice as warm or more than twice as warm than what we had during the last interglacial, and in a very short time frame. The last interglacial warming occurred over a period of thousands of years. We're talking about this warming occurring over decades. So the fact that polar bears survived warming periods of the past is a really important thing to recognize, and we can use that to say, yes, if we get a handle on greenhouse gases and bring sea ice back, there will be polar bears around to populate it. But we also have to recognize that the warming we're experiencing now is quite different, happening faster and projected to go to a higher level than anything that we've seen during the evolutionary history of polar bears.
I can't imagine how interesting your work has been all the years that you've spent engaged in studying polar bears and in these remote places. When you look at the overall picture, it sounds quite gloomy for the future of polar bears unless some fairly significant things happen quite quickly. What is your level of concern for the future viability of polar bears populations?
Well, I guess I view the future of polar bears from sort of a cautiously optimistic standpoint. I have great faith in the ability of humans to understand what they're doing and to turn it around in order to not only make sure that polar bears survive, but to head off a lot of the influences in other parts of our environment that global warming is having and is projected to have. So I'd like to think that we will get our act together. We will head this problem off. We'll use a combination of conservation and research and technology to understand how we can do this as well as possible and that we will come to grips with this problem. In the near term, it's likely because of the inertia in the climate system, because of the heat that's already built up but not yet expressed in the Earth's system, we're going to get warmer no matter what we do. And the degree of that warmth may cause polar bears to disappear from Alaska, for example. And after having studied polar bears for 28 years, it's hard for me to think that there wouldn't be polar bears in Alaska.